Welcome to We Are Technologies User Friendly with host Bill Sickens, technology architect.
And welcome to this week's episode of User Friendly 2.0. I am your host, Bill Sickens. With me is my co-host, Gretchen. Hi, Gretchen.
Hi there.
And also in with us this week is our game host and editor, Bill Snodgrass. Bill, welcome to the show.
Hey.
Jeremy has this week off. So on this episode, we're going to be looking at a couple of different things. We're going to review the new Spider-Man movie that just opened yesterday. And is it good? Is it not good? We didn't like Toy Story 4 much, but this one's a little bit different. We'll see where we end up going with that. We're also going to be talking about video games and screen time today and how much screen time may be too much. And it's not just video games. It's our phones in general. We do a lot of things on the computer now, a lot more than we ever used to. What makes it work? And what age should you be to actually be able to sit down and know the difference between what's good and what's not good? And how do you control that? That's going to be coming up here in a little bit. But first, with no further ado, let's go ahead and go into our review of Spider-Man. I actually recorded this over at the theater, so we're going to go live there now. I have just finished a screening of the new Marvel superhero movie Spider-Man Far From Home that just opened in theaters yesterday. And I have to say, this is one of the best superhero movies that I have seen so far. The movie stars Tom Holland playing the role of Peter Parker, or Spider-Man, who has to go out and save the world because the Earth's in danger and, well, everyone else is busy. It happens to all of us. The story, which also includes a plot of a basic teenage love story, is really pulled off by everybody that's in there. The presentation is well, running just a little bit over 2 hours. It doesn't feel like it. You get into the story, you care about the characters, and really enjoy the time. The CGI in the movie is done well. It's not overwhelming, but it contributes to the story, and scenes from all over the world add to this, which is something that definitely I would want to see again. I would have to give this movie a 5 spider webs out of 5.
So I don't know about you guys, I've always loved superhero movies. Whether you like this one or not, it's kind of fun to see another one out in theaters. What do you think?
Well, I haven't seen it yet, so I can't really give an opinion, but I do like superhero movies.
I've always liked the Spider-Man franchise in general.
I've never been a fan of Spider-Man personally. I mean, some of the animated stuff, yeah, some of the comics, but I don't know, the movies always felt a little too lighthearted for me.
Now, see, I'm like that way with the opposite reasons for Batman. I think sometimes you do need to find kind of a middle ground on these things. And it totally makes sense. But
which I guess that's the reason, you know, I'm a Batman fan, so.
Oh, there you are. You and I will have to have that argument in a segment in one of these days. I think we might go over our time, though. So moving in and talking about movies and just general screen time in general, there's a lot of things that have been in the news lately dealing with the idea of how much screen time is too much screen time. And Bill, we'll have a little bit more time to talk about this later in the show, but just give us a quick synopsis. What do you think of that? Is a general 10,000-foot view topic?
Well, it's always been that question. And I mean, I can go back to historical statements. You know, people used to think reading newspapers was too much time, you know, and comic books. Those were going to ruin people's lives. And we can't forget back in the 80s when heavy metal music was going to destroy our youth and all that kind of stuff because people were spending too much time on it. Now, what I recall is there was a bit of a study done, if I recall correctly. Now, the main part of that was that it wasn't necessarily screen time itself. Now, of course, there was older TVs, probably had some other problems, you know, tube TVs and stuff like that. But it was the content was the biggest problem that I recall that report saying, was that video games themselves weren't necessarily causing problems. In fact, they were finding people that were watching reality TV, I think it was, were having more problems. And that was because of the interactivity of your mind to what you're watching or spending time on. And so with video games, of course, you're being active. I mean, maybe it was just your hands or something, but your mind was still processing through things, learning, adapting, things like that. Whereas watching TV was extremely sedentary and very passive in its situation. Now, of course, that doesn't include into, you know, other problems. You know, I think a lot of people are ignoring things, you know, in our day-to-day lives. We know we talk about it at the workplace and stuff, you know, proper posture, proper chairs. And I don't think there's really enough put into that at a lot of workplaces. Some do. You know, we're having a generation of, you know, these repetitive stress disorders and things like that that are caused more from how we're doing things maybe than what we're doing.
And, you know, that totally makes sense. One of the other things, too, and you kind of touched upon this a little bit, is that video gaming has changed. There's a lot more activity to it now. With Nintendo, with the Wii, and everything since then, you have motion gaming. And I've been finding that using the VR headset can actually be a workout.
And that's true. Yeah. I mean, it is definitely progressing above that. I mean, I remember back when Dance Dance Revolution was probably the most active you were ever going to get on a game physically. And that was, of course, in arcades until they started doing home mats and things like that. But what I meant, too, is mentally. And like when I was saying with TV or video games, the difference there is your TV, maybe the most you're doing mentally is figuring out what chips you're eating or something like that. Or going, oh, well, that's an idea. Or who's this? Or, you know, something like that on that end. Whereas in video games, even going back in the day with Mario, and I'm not talking these, what are they, idle games that they have nowadays, which I think are just data miners. there's evidence for that. You're actually sitting there and, you know, you're thinking, okay, let's go back to Mario, you know, one of the earliest ones everyone remembers. You're still sitting there thinking, you know, math and doing things in your head. You might not be knowing you're doing it, but, you know, there was a momentum, there was speed, there was things, you know, you had to time things. So you were interacting. Your mind was still working with what was going on in the game.
Yeah, and that totally makes sense. And Gretchen, from your end, I know that you're a bit of a Star Wars fan. We've talked about that in the past. And there is a game on the VR headset that I know we all like, if you want to just tell us a little bit about it, called Beat Saber.
Oh, yeah, I love the Beat Saber. And yes, you really can get a workout of playing this game. I mean, I'd be dripping sweat after playing because I would get so into it.
Oh, yeah, I've been there. And the motion pickups actually know the force and the different things that you're using as you're playing it. So there's a lot going on there. And like Bill says, it's more than just watching something.
Yeah, when just like what he was saying, when you're doing Beat Saber, you're ducking, you're stepping to the side, you're moving your arms, you're coordinating several different body motions, and mentally watching down the row as it comes towards you, preparing yourself for certain specific actions. So yeah, there's a lot more going on with these kinds of video games.
So in researching, and this topic, by the way, is one that we got through the website, and anybody that has questions, that's how we do our programming, let us know. It's userfriendlyshow.com, and this was one of the questions we actually got from our first week on the air a couple of weeks back. And looking for getting and digging into the answer to this question, we're going to have a clinical psychologist, a Dr. Linda Lindman, on the show a little bit later, who's going to give us her take on this too, and we'll see what she has to say. But I do think that we're actually seeing some differences in the way that games are done now, and they are more interactive. And this definitely has to play into these studies and some of these things. And we actually also have to look at data that's current and not necessarily a few years old just because of how much the technology has changed. So with that, we'll go ahead and circle back to this a little later in the show. But for right now, let's get into our news topics of this week. Gretchen, what do you have?
Well, my first topic for us to discuss is hacker toolkits. So tell me about this.
This is actually a very interesting thing. And for anybody that might have been listening, we're also doing a Tech Tuesday here at theanswerportland.com at 6:40 and 8:40 a.m. I actually am getting up early enough to do that on the morning news, on Morning Edition. And this is a topic that actually came up there this week in that they're actually starting to sell software on the dark web. And I don't know if just starting is right. I think this has been out there for a while. It's just getting more pronounced to where
Backtech 3 back in... Geez, what, 2007?
Oh, yeah, there's been toolkits for a while. It just hasn't been so formalized. It's like going to a store online now to buy them. You can actually fill out a form. I want to hack this company, and I want to do it this way, and it'll give you the appropriate toolkit. And I don't know if I'd put my credit card number in on that, but you pay for it. Actually, it's usually with Bitcoin. And you actually get the software that will allow you to be able to do it. So this
The customized DDoSs and stuff. Yeah, I remember those.
Yep, something that actually...
I was watching something on it a while back.
Actually builds it out. It's something that's totally out there. Send your questions in on that, and we can actually hit more of that topic as you ask us. What's our next item, Gretchen?
Google Calendar scam. What's that about?
Okay, so this is an interesting thing that has started to come up more and more as people are getting more savvy to the issues that are related to getting emails in and those type of attacks. And what we're actually starting to have now is a situation where the way that the bad guys are trying to get into our systems are changing a little bit. And they've actually figured out something where they can use Google Calendar specifically and other online calendars. And what they'll do is they'll send you an event And if you open it up and you have your settings not set right, it actually can attach to the calendar and cause different things to happen. So the best way to handle this is to go into your settings, specifically on Google Calendar, and make sure that you have the option to accept anonymous events turned off. And like anything else with email, just watch what's coming in.
Oh, lovely. I'm going to need to have you walk me through that one. Okay. Our next thing is T-Mobile launches 5G Friday in Atlanta, Cleveland, Dallas, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, and New York City.
So you hit the cities, and we've been getting a lot of questions in through the website about this, especially since last week when we were talking about 5G and AT&T claiming to have 5GE, but we don't mention the E too loudly. This is where we're really starting to see a launch. Now, the cities you just gave us, T-Mobile is launching in this week, and it's a very small part of those cities. They are telling us right now that it will also only work dependably outdoors, so there's obviously some bugs still to get worked out of it. And you have to have a 5G phone in order to be able to use it.
You have to be outside?
You have to be outside.
Really?
So, hey, it'll get everybody outside a little bit more. After the break, we're going to start looking at some of the different topics from this week's show. We're going to start with a question and answer session. This is where you get to do the programming. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Send us your questions. We're about to actually look at some of them on the air here. And this is how we set up our programming. This is how we get a lot of our topics. And we want to hear from you. Become a part of the show. That's the best way for us to know what you want to hear. Userfriendlyshow.com is our website. One User Friendly on Twitter. One User Friendly on Facebook. And of course, you can get a hold of us here at the station at KPAMAM860, theanswerportland.com. And that's also where you go to play our podcast. Want to check something again? Want to listen to last week's show? Or if, I know this would never happen, but if you didn't get a chance to hear us when we went live on Saturday, it's a good way to be able to get back and review what you may have missed. So questions and answers. Gretchen, we don't have Jeremy this week, so I think let's just get you to ask the questions. I think you have a copy of them in front of you. Now, these are not all of the questions, of course, but they're what we can fit in here. So let's just see how far we get.
All right. Our first question is, how do I make my router faster? And this is from @141 Ahmed Brook on Facebook.
All right. Well, thank you for the question. That's, you know, not a, just a small one here. Because there's a number of different things you got to look at. And Wi-Fi to me has been one of the most kind of good, but also frustrating things that are out there, because when it works, it's really nice. But a lot of times it doesn't work. And what's happening now is we're seeing a lot of things where the routers that were made, assuming, just to quote Bill Gates from a number of years ago, nobody's going to need more than 640K of computer memory. There was an assumption a lot like that when routers were first made and when Wi-Fi first came out, that they could handle certain speeds and the internet speed would never be above that, so therefore it was okay. So one of the things to do is check how old your equipment is. Now, it may still work. It may still work the way it's supposed to. But with internet speeds getting faster and faster out there now, you might actually have a situation where your connection is faster than the router is capable of being able to handle. And the newer ones definitely fix that problem sometimes. And I'll get into that in just a minute here. And that's actually the second part to check on it, is to figure out if your equipment is actually working at full speed. I've been seeing on a lot of new equipment now where you actually can go in and there's a switch for low, medium, and high, and this is both for the antenna and for the speed that actually goes through it. So the antenna setting on that is how far your signal gets out. So if you're missing signal in part of the house, that is one thing to check. If you have a newer router, you can probably actually turn up the output. And then the second part of it has to do with the speed. All right, what's our next question?
Our next question is, I heard that Nest was limiting or turning off my devices. Is this true? And this is from Juan Gomez.
Yes, this is actually a very good question and something that has been floating around there. The short answer to this is yes. For some reason, we have a smart home system that's, well, there's no other way to put it, going to be a little bit dumber after August. So what happened with this is Nest was purchased by Google a number of years ago. And it's a system that's just been kind of sitting out there. They've been continuing to manufacture things. They got a really, really good CEO in there for a little while that was just absolutely a genius, but didn't take a lot of the advice that was given. So after that, it's kind of just been something that's been doing its thing until this year. And at the Google conference, they announced that they're going to be making a lot of changes to the Nest platform. For one thing, everything that's compatible with it going forward will be called Google Nest instead of just Nest. Now, Juan, what you heard on the question here is actually something that's more related to third-party devices. So if you have something that's a Nest-branded device, it should continue to work. But third-party things, they're shutting down the program that allows for interaction from that, and that's actually going to create a lot of devices that work now that will not work in the future. Now, there's always a chance that this still may be backtracked on. We don't know. There's been some rumor to that effect, but nothing official. And the date that this is actually supposed to start is late August, and we're going to have to see what happens from there. And we will cover this a little bit more as I'm able to get some more information on it.
All right, let's go on to our third question. How do you make costumes for Comic-Con, and what is required? This is from Jim Breach from West Lynn.
Well, Gretchen, this sounds like a question for you. How do you make costumes for Comic-Con?
That's a huge question. First of all, let's go with the what is required. Generally, there isn't anything required. It's up to you. Now, the cons themselves set some requirements. Often it is modesty requirements. They don't want certain body parts hanging out or being too revealing.
Yeah, that
because
makes
most Comic Cons are family events.
Right.
Not like an adult thing, if you know what I mean.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that totally makes sense.
That for me is probably would be the what is required question part of that. So you would want to check with the Comic Con that you plan to go to, because different events have different rules. Let's see. How do you make costumes for Comic Con? Now, that is really huge. And there are numerous ways of making costumes. Throughout the years, I've seen cardboard. I've seen paper.
Okay.
I've seen foam, fabric. There are lots of tutorials on how to do the construction on like YouTube. And the fabric stores have a lot of patterns. So first of all, you really need to decide what kind of costume do you want? You know, are you a Marvel superhero? Are you a Star Trekker? Are you from Firefly? Or maybe you're an anime person. So you really need to decide that first.
And it seems perhaps like also it would be a little bit dependent on what your capability is of doing, because some of what you just mentioned might be completely a cloth outfit, and other ones, like I saw an Iron Man a couple of years ago that was just absolutely amazing, but the most of the costume was plastic and other materials and motorized. So there's certainly a bit of this that would seem like it's related to what you have is at your disposal to be able to do.
Skill level and materials available. Some things are just too expensive. So I've seen some costumes that have been made out of cardboard.
Right.
You know?
And some really good ones, too.
Yeah. So it's really up to you. What just need to start somewhere and go for it.
Okay. Now, that totally makes sense. Now, as far as cost, because that's certainly something that plays into this, and just using a for example, because I have the Wookiee suit for the character that I play, which is a lot of fun, but
it was a lot of work.
It was a lot of work, and not including the labor hours. I think we were into that, about $1,000 for the material and the cooling suit that goes underneath and all of that.
Yeah, I see. I wasn't part of the purchasing of the cooling suit part, so I don't know how much your cooling gear was. The fabric was probably the most expensive part as far as materials go, and then the labor.
Right.
If you had had someone else do this, they would have charged you a lot of money.
I can only imagine. So, all right. Well, that's our time for today on our Q&A. Go ahead and keep sending your questions in, userfriendlyshow.com, and we'll be back after the break.
This is User-Friendly 2.0 here on TheAnswerPortland.com, KPAM AM 860. We were talking a little bit earlier in the show about the idea of video games and the massive amount of time our kids seem to spend playing them. And joining me now is Dr. Linda Lindman, a clinical psychologist. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been in practice since about 2004. I work with the Veterans Administration currently, but I've also had private practice and have worked for several years with the Air Force. So I recently relocated from Alabama to Washington State, and I'm loving the great Pacific Northwest.
Well, wow. Well, welcome. And it's great. I love it up here myself. It's just a great area. And on that, we've got some great listeners. And actually, what we're talking about today is a question that came in about 2 weeks ago about screen time. And the first thing that I'd like to start with here is, what is a lot of phone and online video time do to a young mind?
Well, we're finding out that kids have increased their use of screen media just terrifically in the past few years. They're spending on average about 7.5 hours a day, 7 days a week using media outside of school. That's with media that they use inside school too. So the problem with it is that it has huge effects on their brain from an early age clear up into adulthood. They have effects on their cognitive ability, their physical health. There's an addictive potential, and there's emotional consequences as well. So it's something that you need to take seriously from the time the kid is about 6 months old until they leave your house. Very important to limit their time.
Now, what's a suggested amount of time outside of school?
Well, it depends on the age. For kids up to about 2 years old, up to 18 months of age, there should be no media. From 18 months of age to about 24 months of age, the parent should only choose really high quality media and watch it with their child. Then from ages 2 to 5, less than 1 hour per day of high-quality program is recommended. So it's not much time. It's cutting down significantly on the amount of time kids are propped in front of televisions and iPads and iPhones, you know, everything.
You consider 8 hours to 1 hour. Yeah, that would be a huge difference.
It is.
So does there seem to be a different effect from, say, video games versus watching a television show to playing on the iPad, or is it all kind of the same thing?
Well, watching television doesn't have that sort of interactive component that we have with games and iPads and that kind of thing. That becomes a problem when kids don't interact face-to-face. They don't develop that sense of social communication, right? They can immediately react to something going on in a game by moving their fingers. Immediately, they get a rush of color and movement, and it's immediate gratification. Whereas to learn how to communicate face-to-face, you watch for that other person's behavioral cues, and you adjust your response accordingly. It's also not immediate. So there's that social learning component that is so important in learning how to get along with your peers, and learning it has effects on personal and social and academic outcomes. The people who learn to develop behavioral cues by face-to-face interaction have superior social skills. So they form more positive peer relationships, and they have stronger bonds with friends.
Okay, that's that totally makes sense. And I think I can guess the answer to this next one, but how do you feel when I don't know if you've ever run into this, but where you go to a restaurant and you have a family with young children watching something on the phone while the rest are eating, that seems like that would play into that in a negative way.
It does play into it. In fact, it's recommended that parents don't use their iPhones and other devices when they're with their children. There should be no screen time going on during mealtime or even in bedrooms, and especially at night when kids are going to bed, because you can't regulate it at all.
So now when your kid is demanding screen time, what do you suggest? How would you react to that, and what are some of the alternatives?
Well, some of the alternatives are to suggest other activities, such as going outside to play with friends. That is tremendously effective with their health. Kids who are plopped in front of a screen all the time develop obesity. It affects their heart. It affects their entire health. Kids need to be outside and exercising. And so a parent could really get up and go outside with their kid, go shoot baskets, go, you know, throw a ball back and forth, anything like that. We have to teach them by example, by not using our own phones and different kinds of media. And we have to teach them there are other things to do that are much more important.
And, you know, I think both ends of that are probably, you know, where the difficulty comes from. So, well, listen, thank you so much for joining us today. And hopefully we can have you back in a few weeks and talk about some more of these things, because I know that it's a big deal now. And as everything is computer based, it's just kind of part of our lives. But dealing with it right is so important.
Well, you know, media is very important to learn about, too, but it needs to be very high quality programming and it needs to be monitored. Kids need to be taught how to use it wisely.
And there you are. Well, this is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Later this summer, we're going to have a couple more live shows. It looks like we are going to be at the Rose City Comic Con. And there's something also coming up on the agenda called SuperCon or something like that. So we're going to be talking to them and figuring out what that is a little bit too. It looks like it's like one day, but there is a lot of cosplay and different things like that going on. So it's probably going to be very much worth doing. And that one is set to happen towards the end of July. Send us your questions, send us your comments, userfriendlyshow.com, or of course on theanswerportland.com here at KPAM AM 860. So, Gretchen, I know that you love robocalls.
You mean my mom loves robocalls?
Yes, your mom loves robocalls. I have heard some of the stories of these things and gotten a few myself, mostly about my car warranty or my windows is illegal and there's a SWAT team coming or something. And these type of things are the most complained about situation to the FCC, something like 10,000 complaints a day, and wow, the number of robocalls have been getting worse each year to where it's in the millions per month now. They've actually started looking at the different demographics to see who gets the most and doing it by city and finding out that it's happening all over the place. So
well, I can tell you one thing. It makes me concerned about like our seniors. You know?
Well, the thing of it being a total scam is absolutely correct. And there's a lot of new twists on that, which we're going to talk about here in just a minute. And one of the more targeted areas is seniors. That segment of our population, I think, trusts a little bit more sometimes. And unfortunately, they also are more victims to these things. So it's good for everybody to kind of know what to expect and what to do with it. And you were saying, I know that your mom's had some problems with us. Tell us a little bit about some of the calls she's gotten.
Well, there's the Windows problem. There's the IRS. And then there's this other person that will call up and go, "Hi, Grandma. It's so-and-so. I need money. I got in a car accident." You know, and she starts or he starts crying and, you know, tearing at your heartstrings and, you know, trying to get help and money and it's really awful.
Now, on that latter one, did they have any kind of personal information or did it feel like it was a script?
I suspect it was a script.
Okay. Yeah. And that totally makes
sense.
But they were
really good at it. They were actors. Whoever these people were really good at acting.
And it seems like it's the same principle. I know a lot of the emails that are designed to get personal information are based on the idea that they would come from, a major bank. And even though everybody doesn't have accounts at that bank, enough of them do to where it works. And enough people have grandchildren, of course, that it seems like that's a generic enough term that would still seem specific to certain people.
And one of the key factors that I noticed, because I actually talked to one of these people myself, and what they'll do is they'll be so emotional in tears and so upset that when you start asking them, "Where are you? Where's the phone number? What's the name of the city?" When you start trying to ask them for details, they get very emotional and confused, and they're trying to really pull at your heartstrings.
Right, and just get your personal information or get money. At the end of the day, that seems to be what it's about.
Yeah.
So
what? Tell me about some of these other things that are going on.
Well, one of the
are they going to fix these?
Yeah, we're going to get to the fixing part of it. Hopefully. We're going to talk about what they're planning to do to fix it. That might be a better way to put it. The do not call registry clearly hasn't worked, and a lot of these companies are just considering the fines from that part of the cost of doing business. So they are actually taking it a step further now. But yeah, some of the other stuff that I've run into is the One Ring and Hang Up one. So most of us have the ability to call back a number that has just come in with the caller ID. And what they've done is they figured out that a lot of people do this without first checking, especially in the middle of the night. So what they'll do, in fact, I just had this happen to me this morning, is they'll call and let the phone ring once and then hang up. And then the number they're calling from is, there's a lot of international calling codes that are three digits and look a lot like our area code. So when you hit the thing to call them back, it dials them back. And now you're talking to the equivalent of a toll number or like a 900 number type situation in another country, where someone picks up and their sole goal in life is to keep you on that call as long as possible because it bills by the minute.
Oh, what a bunch of dirty, rotten scoundrels.
Yes, yes. I can think of a few other words, but I won't say them on the air.
You told me I can't say those words.
No, but the bottom line of it is something that's extremely frustrating and can be very dangerous to the pocketbook. And there's not a lot you can do about it because the phone company basically says, well, we're just passing the bill along. And whether you have an old-fashioned landline or one of the new internet-based systems, it's still the same type of thing. So the first thing that's recommended to prevent or at least be able to mitigate that a little bit is, if you don't make a lot of international calls, you usually can call your phone provider and have them shut down that ability. So if someone was to dial an international number or you were to try and call them back, it would be much less likely to go through. I don't want to say never. It should be never, but you don't know for sure. But it definitely will take it a step in the right direction. And you can do that on your mobile phone as well. Now, you talked about the Windows scam. Another big one is the IRS scam. These are both based on the same idea of, we want money. As far as I know, there is no utility company. The IRS certainly doesn't do it. Microsoft with Windows wouldn't call you on something like that. They would ever ask you to pay for something with a gift card or a green dot card. These are all different ways that the scammers use, and something that definitely can be a red flag to tell you that there's something wrong here.
Right.
What are the other
things? Never give your personal information out, ever.
Yeah, and that's always a good thing. And if you do feel like you need to deal with it, and it is or seems like it's coming from a utility company you might legitimately work with or your bank or something, get their phone number independently of the call, like from the real website or from something that you may have with it on it, and then call them back so that you're originating the phone call and you know it's not just coming from some random place. So on that, the question is, what do we do about it? And this is going to be very interesting to see how this actually comes out. But the FCC has recently announced that they're allowing mobile phone companies and others to be able to block robocalls. Now, the one question is we've actually had this for a couple of weeks now. When are they going to do it? So we're going to find out. We're reaching out to somebody from the FCC. Hopefully, we'll be able to have them on the show next week that can answer some of those questions more specifically. But this is definitely something that's an ongoing topic and an ongoing concern, and we will definitely continue to keep you informed. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0, and as promised, we got to go check out Geek Expo this week, and this is a very unique event. Gretchen, can you tell us a little bit about what the event was?
Well, it seems like it's a crafters show that is focused on items that people who would fall into the category of a geek, I guess, would like. So if you liked Marvel comics, DC comics, Doctor Who, Star Wars, Star Trek, any of those kind of things, Dungeons and Dragons, any of the things that we would commonly think as being nerd-like, they had it. And they made all kinds of wonderful things. I saw skirts, I saw purses, I saw backpacks, I saw belts, I saw really cool boxes that lit up. What were some of the things that you saw? I saw toys.
Yeah, there was a lot of toys, and there was a lot of handcrafted things like the wood dice boxes. And the other thing was people that published their own books. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I saw a couple of those too.
And you know, go.
Oh, and there was food.
Yeah, there was food. Yeah, there was the marshmallows were interesting. The strawberry marshmallows.
Yeah, the marshmallows. Yeah.
And chocolate and everything else. All that was just amazing. And I think the preconception I had going into this, that it was going to be like the vendor alley at a Comic-Con, and there were some aspects like that, but the products they had were very different, not something you would necessarily find everywhere.
Right. This was to a unique, specific audience, and I think that's the reason why they called it Geek Expo, because they were focusing on an interest for a specific group of people.
Yeah, the other thing I thought is that it was produced well. It is done by a professional events company, and it was at the convention center, so it was set up in a very nice way. It was indoors. You didn't have to worry about, you know, stuff like that. And then the other side of it is from what I understand, it is actually a national show. They go to different cities and do different things. And in talking to some of the crafters there, and we're going to have some interviews from them in upcoming weeks, but talking to some of the crafters and artists there, one of the things is they're being priced out of some of the bigger Comic-Cons, and they were saying that this type of an event allows them to bring their wares, and I think that is why it is so unique.
Yeah. I also found that a lot of them were really nice.
Yeah.
Nice group of people. Very friendly. Oh, there was also, you know, we're talking about how the many different items, there were two different vendors who did tea.
Yeah.
I thought that was unusual.
Yeah, that was. So. We'll continue to look at these things and as they're up and coming, and definitely be going back to this one next year. And subscribe at our social media, One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter. We put out the times of the events that we cover so that you can know about them before they actually happen. This is User Friendly, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2019, User Friendly Media Group, Inc. The views and opinions expressed in this show are those of the host and not necessarily User Friendly Media Group, Inc. or this station. Music licensing by BMI. Hosting provided by WeAreTechnology.com. Podcast available at theanswerportland.com or userfriendlyshow.com.